I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is My Wardrobe Malfunction, the podcast about our relationship with clothes. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes bloody horrendous. This is our 22nd Zoom episode, recorded in September 2020. That means there are 21 others to binge on if you haven't heard them already, plus 8 more from our first season, including Elizabeth Hurley, Tan France, and Dame Kristen Scott-Thomas. You can find everything by going to our website, mywardmail.com, where you can also see our pyjama party and join us by emailing your own clothing stories to help@mywardmail.com. Finally, do please subscribe, rate and review, and follow us on the usual socials at MyWardMal. Right, on to today's special guest, broadcaster, author, CEO, and one of the loose women, Andrea McLean. Her new book, This Girl Is On Fire, is out now. It's remarkably brave and candid. Wow, what a read. So, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. Well, I have got the joyous moment of introducing Andrea McLean, direct from her very glamorous and gorgeous bedroom. How are you?
Hello. It's so funny, isn't it? Because I'm only here sitting on the floor, literally with this laptop resting on an ottoman, because this is the quietest room, because I've got really good curtains in here and lots of soft furnishings. But at any moment, I could be joined by a dog, a child, anybody. So as long as that's all right, we're all good.
That's so fine. I mean, exactly. I've been kind of like going around the house. Our internet here is so terrible because we live in kind of in Sussex in the middle of nowhere. And it's, so if anything happens, apologies, people who are listening. But I found out something that I never knew about you, which was that, yes, you were born in Glasgow, but then you spent the first 15 years of your life in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
How did that, why was that?
Well, my dad was an engineer, and he worked for Tate & Lyle, the sugar people.
Okay.
And basically, my dad left school at 16 with, well, 15 actually, with nothing. No O-levels, A-levels, anything. He just left. And he got an apprenticeship with a firm in Glasgow who basically made machinery that was then put into factories all around the world. And he married my mum. They'd met at 15, 16. They got married at sort of 20 and 21. And he got offered the chance to go to the Caribbean and put some of this machinery into a factory. And, you know, they'd never even been abroad before. They'd got a little flat round the corner from my mum's and my dad, who my granddad was a carpenter on the ships in the Clyde. My granny was a cook in the kitchens on the Clyde. And that was going to be their kind of upbringing. My mum was training to be a hairdresser. And they went out, what was supposed to be for 6 months. Then it extended to 2 years, and it ended up being their whole life. My parents basically lived abroad for the rest of their adult life, bar a few years when I was a teenager. We moved back here for a while. And then as soon as I was old enough, they headed back off again. So yeah, moving to Trinidad changed all our lives. It was wonderful. It was a great place to grow up.
Of course. But when did you first come to the UK without your parents?
Well, I came back. We all moved back together. There was, you know, we discussed the idea of boarding school and that sort of thing when I was a teenager to do my O-levels and A-levels. And we all decided as a family that actually we'd rather stay together. So we came back to the UK when I was 15. And I went to school in the Midlands. And then, because that was where my dad had got a job. And then we moved to Cheshire. because he moved again with his job. Basically, by the time I was 17, I'd been to 9 different schools in just 4 different countries around the world. I also lived in the Philippines for a year when I was 8 and 9 because of my dad's job. So we moved around a lot.
How did that affect your confidence, having to make new friends all the time?
That's such a good question. And I think that it's something that a lot of people don't really understand how much that shapes you. Just depending on how you are as a person. I'm really close to my sister. She's 4 years younger than me, and she handled it very differently. And I don't know if it was because of the ages she was at the times that we moved. She just kind of marched in and said, "Hi, I'm Linda," and settled straight in and made this massive group of friends wherever she went. I was older every time and always a bit more gauche and shy and insecure and reserved. And so in terms of making friends, I always seemed to move either halfway through a school year or halfway through a term when everyone had already got their group. So I always ended up with people who hadn't formed a group yet, if that made sense. And I was always just happy with anyone who would have me. And that kind of carried on for the rest of my life. I know.
But also, I mean, living in all those exotic locations, that must have really affected the way you dressed, didn't it? I mean, did you bring all sorts of wonderful fabrics and things from those places? And so from Trinidad to the Philippines, or Philippines to Trinidad?
Do you know, it did, but not in the way that you would think. Almost in the opposite way to you would think. What it did was, basically, I grew up in third world countries for all of my formative years. And what that did was, it meant to me, clothes were just something that were bright, comfortable. We didn't have a lot of money growing up, so my mum made most of our clothes. Do you remember the Butterick patterns? And you could get all sorts of different patterns, Vogue patterns, all sorts of things. And our treat would be, if we'd been good, was we could go and choose a pattern, choose some material, and mum would make us our clothes. And she'd always make my sister and I identical outfits, and then little tiny ones for our dolls. So we would all sort of dress the same.
Just crazed family.
Yeah. But what it meant was, I had no idea about labels, about, you know, we moved back to the UK and suddenly it was, what kind of trainers did you wear? And this, what sort of brand? Growing up, I wore Bata shoes. Now, anyone who's lives in a third world country or has been to a third world country, Bata is a shoe shop. It's BATA. You get it all around, like Africa, Indonesia, the Caribbean. And that was the kind of main shoe shop. So I got flip-flops and little plimsolls and this sort of thing. I didn't care what brand anything was. It was just if I liked how it looked. And, you know, if I had a denim jacket, I would paint on the back of it and stick things on and sew things on. But I never cared what label anything was. And I find it really quite sad now that kids, they rely on brands for their creativity. They don't think of making something themselves because everyone's going to laugh at them because it's not got a certain name on it, rather than thinking, do you know, for example, I loved Calvin and Hobbes. It was a cartoon with a little boy who had a tiger who he thought came to life. So I painted a great big Calvin and Hobbes on the back of my denim jacket and embroidered some flowers and did all that. I wore that in my 20s. Didn't care whether I looked ridiculous or not. It was how I wanted to express myself. And kids seem to be a bit too afraid to do that now.
Yeah, they do. But I do think, I don't know how old are your children?
Nearly 19, nearly 14.
Okay. So I do think it's changing. I do think it's changing because now it's all about Depop. And I mean, certainly speaking for my children, they'll go to charity stores and secondhand stores and vintage, and they really don't care about labels. Until it comes to trainers, then they care. But everything else, they don't care. And it's kind of like, you know, so much of fashion is influenced by Japan. And in Japan, for a long time, they've been kind of anti-label. It's all about wearing clothes that could have come from anywhere. And hopefully that will now infiltrate our markets, because I agree, it is sad that they don't customize their own clothes and all that.
Well, funnily enough, my son's just left home. He's gone to university, which that was a whole other thing in itself.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Oh, can't believe how much I cried.
Me too. For 24 hours, sobbed out loud. Yeah, literally. And I don't cry, but my God, I made up for it.
I literally went upstairs, sat on his bed and sobbed. And then the only thing that made me feel better was I started tidying his room, and then I was furious at how dirty it was. So it was fine. Equilibrium was restored. But because he's, you know, he's a boy, he's left home, he's always had his own sort of sense of style, as it were. And I'm quite looking forward to seeing what he's going to come home with. Do you know what I mean? What sort of clothes he's going to pick up, who he's going to be influenced by, is he going to come back with... You know, I remember I bought when I was a student, I remember I've always quite liked hairy bikers for some reason. You'd never think it looking at me, but I do. I quite like kind of rough and tattooed and beardy, and I love all that sort of...
Yeah.
I know you like your sort of grunge music, and I like my shouty music in a more rock sort of way. And I remember going to a party once, and there was this proper biker there. And I went over and chatted to him about, you know, his motorbike and his beard and all the sort of stuff you chat to a biker about. And I said, I love your jacket. And the drunker I got, the more money I offered him for it. At the end of the night, I went home with this biker's jacket and I wore it the whole time.
You did not. How much did you pay for it? Do you remember?
Can't even remember. Oh, there were vodka jelly shots and beer and all. It was messy, but I did buy his jacket off
him. I mean, the balls of you. That's amazing. Maybe that's another way of shopping now. Is just go up to some randomer who's wearing something that you like the look of and say, how much you pay? Can I have it? How much do you
take? I love
that.
Can I have it? Imagine. I think you'd be really flattered if someone came up to you and said, I really like what you're wearing. How much do you want for it?
Yeah, okay, look, we might have something we can start now. So going back to the Caribbean, did you go to a lot of the carnivals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, every year. Carnival in Trinidad isn't like carnival over here, where we sort of get to the bank holiday and think, do you fancy going? I don't know, do you fancy going? What's the weather like? Yeah, I might go, I might not. There is no question whether you go or don't go. The whole country goes to carnival. And you might not necessarily go to Port of Spain, you might not necessarily go to the sort of main event, but everybody has carnival parties in the sort of build up to it. So from when I was a tiny, tiny tot, you had your carnival costume, you got excited over what you were going to wear. And then as you got a bit older, it got to be a little bit more cool and who you were hanging out with and that sort of stuff and what band you were going to chip behind and this sort of thing. But it was all about expression. It was about the music. My heart soars whenever I hear Caribbean music. It literally transports my soul. I think it's wonderful, wonderful sound. Mm.
Do you miss it? Do you miss that, the Caribbean? Would you go back there often?
I missed it for a very long time. I was quite cross when we moved back to the UK. I was a very polite daughter, so I think I only mentioned it once. But deep down, I was very cross. You know, I went to a normal school. I had a really original and lovely upbringing. I was the only white girl in my class. I was only the only white girl in my group of friends. So it was extremely sort of cosmopolitan and broad thinking in terms of nobody cared what religion you were, what color you were, what your thought processes were. We just liked each other. And that was how I grew up. And then I moved to the UK and suddenly it just seemed that much more rigid. And I found people very rude. People were so sort of smiley and laid back in the Caribbean in terms of the pace was so much slower. You'd stop and have a chat. And whereas over here, everyone was very brusque and in a rush and very, very rude. And it took me a while to get my head around that. And I didn't like it very much and wanted to move back. But then I suppose I sort of got used to it like we all do. Have I been back? Many, 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 many times, but never to Trinidad.
Oh, my goodness.
But there's a bit of me wants to keep it frozen in time, and I want to remember it as it was.
I can understand that.
I don't want to go back. I have friends that are still there that I'm still in contact with, friends from school and this sort of thing. And every now and again, they'll send me photos of areas where we grew up. And there's parts of it that haven't survived very well in terms of how I remember it and how they are now. So for me, I love Barbados. Barbados was where we used to go as a child. We used to go to either Tobago, which was like going to Cornwall. We just pop there, you know, for the weekend. Yeah. Or we would go to Barbados, was the equivalent of going to Spain. So people in the UK go to Spain for their summer holidays. We would go there. And I love Barbados. I have really happy memories of there. So I've taken my kids there quite a few times. And I like to get them to stop at a roti shack and try some roti and listen to the music. And they don't quite get it, because they've grown up in Britain, they've grown up in a very different environment. But when I remember once when I was first divorced, I was on my own and I took them away on holiday, just us. And I hired a normal taxi for a day. And I said, take us around the island and show us the real Barbados. I don't want the kids to just see like a hotel and this sort of thing. Mm. I want to see where you live. Take me where you live. Take me where you eat. I want them to see this. They were so bored. Can we go back to the hotel?
Really?
Can we go and play in the pool? We drove past a sugar factory and I was going, that's where your granddad, you know, worked day in, day out. He'd sweat, be covered in oil, climbing in, fixing places like these. Mm-hmm. Can we go back and swim now? And so I might try again when they're a little bit older.
Yeah, it will work when they're a bit older, because we have places like that, and you know, a place in Scotland where I used to go to every year as a child, and exactly the same, took the kids back. Isn't it amazing? Look at the river, you know, take your shoes off, feel it, smell it. And then now they're a bit older, I've taken them back and they love it, and it's one of their favourite places in the world, and they get it. And I think, you know, they have a kind of inherent understanding now, rather than being told that it was a place that was special to me, they feel it. And that comes with a bit of maturity.
Yeah. So as mine were 10 and 5 when I did this little tour. You know, we've been back before, since then, and I didn't bother. We just did the lovely things that they wanted to do. But yeah, 10 and 5 was a bit too young.
Yeah. But they'll remember it. It's, you know, all about building memories, isn't it? But then you came to the UK and you studied journalism and travel writing. And then, how did you get the job as a weather girl?
By mistake. All my best jobs have happened by mistake. None of them have been planned or thought through, which is a terrible career advice to give to teenagers that it will all work out all right. But I did history and politics as my degree. And then when I finished, I'd always wanted to be a journalist. I decided to go traveling. So I worked for a year saving money. So I worked in an office during the week. I worked in a pub at night and a shop at the weekends, and just saved and saved and saved. And I went traveling for a year. And basically what I did was I just kept writing the whole time I was away. And then when I got back, I sold a lot of articles about all the incredible places that I'd been. So, you know, basically magazines and newspapers got great articles for very little money, because I gave them all the photos. I got huge double page spreads everywhere because I was just going, look, do you want this? And just practically gave it away. And then I found that I wanted to be employed as a proper journalist, if you like, but that I couldn't get taken on without a journalism qualification. So I had to come to London and do a postgrad. So I basically, by then my parents had moved to Africa. They'd very kindly set me up somewhere to live for 6 months and then said, after that, you're on your own. And so I applied to journalism college down in London, packed up an old car with everything I had in it and slept on floors and then lived in a bedsit, put myself through college. And it was while I was living in a bedsit, I was applying for every job going, anything that said journalist on it, I was applying for. And it was a job that said on-screen journalist with interest in the weather. And I thought, brilliant, that'll do. So I applied. And they had asked for a photograph and a showreel. And I thought, well, I don't know what a showreel is, but I'll send them a photograph. And I got this phone call from this woman, very snootily, saying, I have no idea why I'm ringing you. You haven't even sent a showreel in, but your photograph must be nice. You've been invited for an audition to be a weather presenter. And I was like, have I? And I couldn't think what I'd applied for. Anyway, I turned up. I thought it was really funny that this is what I'd ended up doing. But I found I loved it. It was such great fun. And because I'd trained as a journalist, I could make notes in shorthand. I was very good at listening to a lot of information and thinking, okay, so really you just want me to say X, Y, Z in normal terms, not all meteorological terms. And at the end of the audition process, this lovely lady, her name was actually called Sally Galsworthy. I'll never forget her name. She took me to one side and she said, well, I didn't expect you to be like this, but actually you're very good. We don't have a job for you right now, but can I keep your name on file? And I was like, yeah, of course you can. And 2 years later, by then I was working as a journalist.
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years went by. I'd forgotten about it. I got a phone call from someone saying, your name has come up as one to watch. I've watched your audition tape. Are you still interested? And by then I was fed up of where I was working. I was working for a features agency in London. And I thought, well, I'll go along and see what happens. And I ended up getting hired by the Weather Channel. So I spent time in America being trained by the Weather Channel. And I just thought, you know, by then I'd moved out of the bedsit. I was now living in a shared flat. Why not? Why not have an adventure? So I quit a staff job for 1 month's work. That was all they could offer me.
You are so courageous all through your life. You are so courageous. But anyway, carry on.
Well, I just think sometimes if an opportunity comes up and it sounds really scary but really fun, I've always done this ever since I was a teenager. I think if I look back on this when I'm 80, will I regret not doing it? And I think, yeah, I would. So I'm going to do it. Even if it doesn't work out, at least I'll know. I don't want to be sitting in a rocking chair somewhere and think, oh, I wonder what would have happened if I'd rather just try. So I did it and I ended up working for them for about 18 months. Then I got made redundant, which was horrible. It's a horrible, totally out of the blue. 1 minute I'd been going and talking about pension plans and this sort of thing. And then boom, I got made redundant. But my granny has a great saying, what's for you won't go by you. And what that means is if something is meant to be, it will happen for you.
Yeah.
And the week that I got made redundant and was crying in my flat thinking, I'm now unemployed, how am I going to pay my bills? The weather presenter on GMTV quit. And I heard this through the kind of weather grapevine. And I thought, I'm going to apply for that job. And how I got that job was also by accident. I sent my photograph in and I now had a showreel and sent that in. And unbeknown to me, the secretary of the then editor of GMTV, which anyone who doesn't know what GMTV is, it's like GMB now or the Today Show in America or what have you. The editor's secretary opened his post and saw my little card with my photo in and started to laugh and said, since when's your girlfriend wanted to be a weather girl? And apparently I was a spitting image of her. So they called me in. Literally to have a look at me for a laugh to see how much I looked like his then girlfriend. So I didn't know this. And I turned up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed thinking, wow, I'm going to get to audition, you know, to be the weather girl on GMTV. And they both just kind of stood there going, she really does. She really does. And I was thinking,
oh my God, Andrea.
What? And so that he said, oh, while you're here, you might as well do an audition. And I did it. And what's interesting was I didn't get the job. They'd already lined up someone else. He was a beautiful human being. He was a model. He was very handsome. They wanted him to do it, but he didn't know how to present the weather. So they hired me to train him. So I got hired by GMTV to train the person who got the job I went for. But because I'm a perfectly nice human being, I thought, okay. So I trained up this lovely young man, and he did it, but he only lasted a few weeks because he couldn't get his head around it and he didn't enjoy it. And so they called me in and just said, look, while we're looking for someone else, will you come and stand in? I was like, yep, any job is a job. I've been made redundant. I'll take this job. In a nutshell, I stayed there for 11 years because I just kept really quiet. And I think they just forgot that they'd said, we're looking for someone else. We're just getting you in for this short time. So I was there for 11 years in the end.
So that was you on an unstoppable trajectory. Nothing, it sounds like nothing could have prevented that happening. There were all these kind of coincidences. And I wonder now, I mean, I often, you know, I think very much the same way, you know, one door closes because another one's going to open. But I wonder, if, I mean, I'm quite a bit older than you, but I wonder if that still happens when you get older, whether, you know, I'm speaking for myself. So I've had, you know, many things that have kind of come my way and got really excited about, only for the door to be slammed in my face. And you then think, oh God, you know, how many fucking doors need to be slammed in my face before one opens? So I'm interested to hear what you think about whether that still applies when we get to middle age.
Do you know, you're so right. And I think all it is age. You know, when you're younger, you just haven't had as many doors slam in your face, that's all. And also you don't have as much to lose. You know, when I took those first brave jumps, I only had to think about myself. I didn't have children then. I didn't have a mortgage. It was a lot easier for me to make a decision that was purely based on, could I look after myself? And I think when, as you do get older, you have much more responsibility on your shoulders. So it's more difficult to be brave, if you like. So I think there's that. But on the other side, oh my God, I've had so many doors slammed in my face. I've had so many jobs that I've gone for that I've thought, ah, this feels so right. This is definitely the one for me. And then lo and behold, no, it's gone to someone else. And you sit and watch them doing really, really well, and you're clapping at awards ceremonies thinking, I really thought that was my job. But
yeah. Or you sit and watch them and they're shit and you think, how the hell could they get that? I would have done it so much better. Let's be honest.
What I do tend to think is it clearly just wasn't meant for me.
Yeah, I still have, you know, I think you always have to have hope, and life's not worth living unless you've got a dream. If all your dreams are realised, then what's the point?
Well, you just make a new dream. If all your dreams are realised, then you just make a new one.
Exactly, you've always got to have a dream, always.
I'll tell you a funny story about not getting a certain job. I'll dance around it for political reasons, which will become apparent. Okay, so I was once offered a co-hosting job of, I wasn't offered the job. I was offered the opportunity to cast for the job. And it was a male-female, you know, the normal thing that they have on telly, the slightly older gentleman and slightly younger lady co-hosting this big job. And...
Yeah, go on.
No, I'm not smart enough for that one, but yeah, it wasn't that one. And so I did my, again, journalism. I massively researched who the co-host was going to be. He had written an autobiography, so I read that. I read every article I could just to get a proper idea of the man behind the person that you see on TV. So I knew his interests, I knew his this, that, that. So I thought, at least if we can spark up a conversation, I know what he's interested in. So I felt really prepared. So we went along to this thing, and basically it was like a chemistry test, as in they want to see whether you gel and you get on. And it was all going really, really well. Until he said a joke, and everybody automatically laughed because this man's really famous and, you know, he's a funny guy. And I laughed, but then I made a comeback and nobody laughed. But I realized they weren't laughing because it wasn't funny. They weren't laughing because they were looking at him. And his face just went from to excuse me. And I knew instantly I hadn't got the job. Because no one's funnier than him. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my goodness,
and
yes.
It was at that moment, and the whole process, everyone just went, well, thank you so much for coming in. And I can remember as I was being walked to the lift, the producer went, thank you. And I knew by his face, and I just said, it was because of the joke, wasn't it? And he went, mm-hmm. So years later, when I was looking at the duo as they were, I just thought, I couldn't have done that job. Because I couldn't have held it in for all those years.
Absolutely. You know, working alongside an ego like that must be impossible. And think, yeah.
So it wasn't meant to be.
Wasn't meant to be. Exactly. So that's why.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi. So, just quickly to the Weather Girl. So, the Weather Girl, I wonder if it was Aurie Kakar Johnson who, the sort of, and Tanya, gorgeous Tanya Bryan, Little Miss Sunshine, because the Weather Girl was sort of pigeonholed, if you like, for wearing the little brightly coloured shift dress, which, as far as I can see, hasn't changed very much. Did you fall into that? Did you dovetail that look? Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a uniform. And also it was breakfast TV, so it was our remit that we weren't allowed to wear dark colours. You had to wear bright colours. And I understood the thought process behind it. The people have just woken up in the morning and they want to see bright, bright colours. So that was fine. But yeah, it was a whole sort of shift dress, a certain look and all that sort of thing. And I was a weather girl in the 90s. And they were kind of seen as... You were supposed to be a little bit sexy and a bit, you know, of a certain type. And I can remember there was one day I was in the makeup room and it was before they'd really got to know me. I was fairly new. I'd only been there a few months and was sort of finding my feet. And there was, I won't name anyone, but there was some newsreaders in the room. Who were women, and they were getting ready, and they were being quite frosty towards me. They weren't being particularly friendly, and I was quietly sort of, you know, in the mirror sort of getting myself ready, and one of them made a very disparaging comment about being a weather girl. Well, at least I'm not a weather girl, or something like that. And I said, why are you not called a news girl? And she went, excuse me? And I said, why am I called a weather girl and you're called a news girl? Because from what I can see, I have to know what I'm talking about and remember it, whereas you just read it off autocue. So why am I called that and you're called that? And she went, well, because I'm a journalist. I said, I'm a journalist. She said, well, I've worked on newspapers. I've worked on magazines and I've got a degree in history and politics and a postgrad in journalism. So why are you not called a girl? And, you know, to be fair, and I said it with a smile on my face, we became very good friends after that. We became very good friends. And for me, I never saw myself as a weather girl. I was just a person who happened to do the weather and loved it. I genuinely loved it. I had so much fun. It was a brilliant job. And I won't have a word said against weather girls because apart from don't call them girls, they're just people who happen to be presenting the weather.
Yeah.
There was another time. GMTV was up for an NTA and everyone was all very excited and talking about it. And because I was new to it all, I said, what is it you're all talking about? Oh, the NTAs, what we're going to wear tonight. What are the NTAs? Oh, they're the National Television Awards. And I hadn't been invited. And every other presenter was going. So I went up to, when I think about it now, it's a sort of blissful ignorance of youth. I went upstairs to the bosses and to the boss's secretary, and I said, there seems to be a mistake. Everybody's talking about the NTAs tonight, and I don't seem to have a ticket. And they went, yeah, the presenters are going. And I said, but I am a presenter. And they went, no, you're the weather girl. I said, excuse me, when you think of how many times people are on per hour on the show presenting their segments, I'm actually on more than them. So I need a ticket. And again, I remember there was these two older women and they were standing in the little kitchen bit upstairs and they looked at each other and they went, we'll bike one over to you. But this is a whole other story. I ended up being sat with all the, what do you call them? The crowd fillers. They didn't put me in with the whole lot. And I got, people tried to kick me out halfway through because I thought I was one of the students that came into, and I was like, nope, I deserve to be here. You're not carrying me out of the NTAs. Yeah.
Well, you know what? you've done pretty bloody well on the back of that, because you've been on our TV screens for, what, 25 years now? And but you are best known for Loose Women, aren't you? And I've always wondered, although I've, you know, been on the show with you, and you're just gorgeous and lovely, and it's a really fun show to go on. It's one of my favourites. But I always wonder, is that, do you work out what to wear as a collective, or do you just go with the flow?
No, there's a really lovely wardrobe team. They choose it. We honest to God, if I had to choose, I'd wear black. I wear black every day, and because I like wearing black, I just feel comfortable in it, and so I have to be put in bright, cheery, daytime TV clothes. So we have these two lovely girls called Gemma and Bertie who've worked for us forever. And basically they make sure that we look like ourselves, but in a daytime TV sort of way.
Yeah. I mean, would you ever allow those clothes to walk out onto the high street, or are they specifically for the studio?
No, many of those clothes walk out in my handbag.
Okay, good girl.
There's a lot of corporate theft.
Good girl. I'm very happy to hear that. Very happy to hear that. Okay, so you don't get to choose anything for TV. If you were going to choose something to wear and it couldn't be black, what would it be?
So when I go on programs and I'm being myself, as it were, rather than as a host or it's a paid job or I know that people expect me to look a certain way, I like to wear something that's like a shirt and jeans and heels.
Okay.
That's how I feel my most comfortable. Or maybe a t-shirt and a blazer and jeans and heels. I never wear heels in real life. I live in trainers. Mm. I mean, where are they? I've just taken them off. I'm sitting on the floor. I live in trainers. But when I'm on the TV or I'm presenting in some kind of way, I do feel when I put my heels on, I stand up a little bit straighter. I stand up taller. I feel like I take up more space. So I wear heels then. And I do like to look smart when I'm presenting. It feels like a uniform.
Yeah, but it's interesting that, and I hear you say that in jeans and a beautiful white shirt and a pair of heels. It's like my whole image of you has completely changed now. And in my mind's eye, that is you. Totally. I'm never going to be able to watch Loose Women and think of, and in those clothes anymore, because they aren't you, Andrea. Those kind of, you know, quite hard lines and bright colours, block colours.
That's my, I mean, I always think when I'm doing Loose Women, I'm being head girl.
Yeah.
So I put on my head girl outfit. But funny enough, I have literally just said a few weeks ago to Gemma and Bertie, right, I'm ready now to start wearing more me clothes.
Mm.
So I want to wear even some nice trainers and jeans and a blazer and a shirt or something like that. I don't want to just be known as, oh, that one that sits on the end in a nice dress.
Mm. So what's changed that for you? What's made you think that way?
I think turning 50. Okay. I mean, I'm nearly 51 now, so it's taken a year to sort of realize, actually, clothes-wise, I'm going to start representing myself more rather than just, it's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
To just put on what someone gives you, you wear it for an hour and take it off and I don't think about it again.
Or it goes in your handbag.
Or it goes in my handbag, yeah. Mainly the summery dresses that I know I can just wear with my trainers when I get home. But I think I'm, did you know what I think it is? Is I don't care so much whether people don't like what I'm wearing. I think before I wanted to wear what I felt everyone else thought I should wear.
Yeah, what people were expecting. Yeah. So now, I mean, now you're in your, you know, at the beginning of your 50s. Has your style changed, or has it always been kind of quite casual? Casual but crisp, I think, is you. Has it always been like that?
Yeah, it has. And but when I'm good, it's classic but crisp. But sometimes I just get it really wrong and I dress like a nana. I don't know why. I go too far down the sort of comfort road and then I don't care whether something looks nice or not, and I'll just wear it anyway. And then I'll see a picture of myself and think, what were you thinking? And then I'll swing too far the other way and I've worn like PVC and worn my hair in a crazy way and think, no, that's not me either. I'm happy in, especially if I'm going out in the public eye, something that's structured and I just put on and don't have to think about it. you know.
Yeah.
That's where I'm comfortable.
Yeah. No, I'm exactly the same. I mean, I just, you know, it's funny how clothing, there's a time, I think, when certainly for me, when I kind of hit middle age, clothing became so important, more important than the clothes, more important than they've ever been in my life. And that's because I think I was so unsure. And I didn't know, you know, it was always, I either looked too young or like you say, like your nana. And I couldn't find the right middle ground for myself. And so it became an obsession and I couldn't find anything. And then because of that, my confidence went further and further and further and further down. And then you kind of start to feel your way. And once you've found your look, whatever that is, and you're comfortable and you think, okay, this is good, it's ticks all the boxes, then you begin to care less. That's what's happened to me. So really I don't actually care very much now. I mean, I do at the right times.
Yeah, of course. You want to look nice. But I mean, like, for example, I suppose it was about the time of I had a hysterectomy. I don't know how long ago it was.
That, yeah.
Yeah, four.
You had
years
early
ago.
Menopause, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And I think since then, because I've put weight on since then, but it's all kind of around my middle, which is very sort of menopausal, putting weight on around your middle. And I'm lucky, I've got very thin limbs, as in my arms and legs are quite thin, but my middle is bigger. So, you know, suddenly finding I couldn't just put anything on and it automatically zipped up. Mentally, that was, excuse me, what's going on? Why can I not fit in clothes that I normally, you know, used to fit into? And I say it took a while to get my heart around that, not just my head, but my heart, to think, well, I've definitely changed. This is, I'm not who I was. And now I just think, well, of course you're not who you were. You can't all, you know, and I do feel, yes, I'm fit, I'm strong, I'm well, I'm happy. Does the fact that I cannot fit into the same pair of jeans, or I can, but I have to always leave the top button undone, is it the end of the world? No. I did a Facebook Live the other day, and at the end of it, I was talking about my latest book, you know, to talk about feeling good about yourself. And I said, look, one of the key things, do not look at other people and think they all know what they're doing, everything is going great for them. I've literally done this whole Facebook Live with the top button undone, and I've felt the zip slowly sliding down as it's gone on. We've all got our thing.
We've all got our thing, and like you say, it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a supermodel or a, you know, Oscar-winning actress. It doesn't matter, we all have our insecurities. But your book, This Girl Is On Fire, you talk a lot about the breakdown that you have and basically mentally imploding. And I mean, I you know, obviously, I don't know if that was somewhat a chemical thing as well as a behavioral situational thing, but did and it sounds trivial to ask almost when you went through such a traumatic phase, but did clothes play a big importance at that time? And was there like a comfort blanket you went towards?
That's such an interesting question. It's not something I've ever considered, but the answer immediately popped into my head when you were talking was yes, because when you go through something that is as painful and traumatic as a breakdown, for whatever your reasons are, like you say, whether it's chemical or whether it's because of past events and what have you, you look for comfort where you can find it. And what I realize now, just with you asking me this question, is my place of comfort, weirdly, was at work, because I could put my uniform on. And as soon as I put my uniform on and put my heels on and put that mask on, actually, I was fine. I was totally fine. When I was at work, it was, I know how to do this. I can do this. But it was the other times when I was feeling extremely low and raw and vulnerable, where I was literally living in slobby old tracksuit bottoms and my husband's t-shirts, actually, that I felt my worst. And for example, during lockdown, I was fine by lockdown, and I'm so relieved that actually my experience happened the year before and not during this time.
It was very recent, Andrea.
It was very recent. Yeah, it was literally a year ago. But
yeah,
one of the things that was really important to me every day in lockdown was getting up and getting properly dressed. And that was for my mental health. It was nothing to do with vanity or anything like that. But it was to make sure that the clothes I wore were clean, ironed. I looked good. I mean, obviously comfortable because you're not necessarily going anywhere. But that I looked after myself so that I was presentable for myself. Because I think a lot of the time we think about the clothes that we wear as to what sort of image we're portraying to the world. You know, what does this say about me? Like the lady who sits on the end in the nice dress, that's what people think about me. So when you're thinking about the image you're portraying for yourself, because no one was going to see me during lockdown, why should I care what I wore? I realized mentally how important it was that I got up, dressed, showered, fresh clothes, and felt good about myself. Otherwise, mentally, it makes a huge difference if you just throw on any old stained t-shirt and sloppy trousers.
Absolutely right. Because it's one of the first things, I'm in recovery. When I first went into, it's not anything I've talked about actually, but when I first went into AA, one of the things they said is that self-care was so important. And I never kind of let myself go sort of in physically in that way. But, you know, a lot of people do because alcohol becomes the most important thing. And it was about self-care. And it's almost like, I think, and this is the same for what you're saying, is that when you protect, it's a form of protection, yes, so you can dress as a form to have it as a form of armour, but it's also it's like you have a film of self-respect around you that people can't penetrate. And so if I wake up in the morning and I feel not great and I'm feeling anxious or whatever, I will always dress up and no one's going to see me. And I think that, you're so right, and I've never thought of it before, that is the time when you find yourself, because you're in midlife, because you're not worried about anyone else. And to have, for that very reason, the benefit of lockdown, although it's been a nightmare for, you know, thousands and millions of people, but just on that positive note, you really had an opportunity to find out exactly who you are. And maybe that's why now you're going, you know what? I'm not going to be that lady at the end of the desk looking all pretty in her little bright colour dress. I want to be me, because you found you.
Yeah. And do you know, am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. that is what's coming. September for me has always been my new year, because I hate the idea of having New Year in January. To me, that makes no sense. January is the worst month of the year. It's, you've had Christmas, which is all lovely, and then it's finished. It's cold, it's dark, it's grey, it's miserable. Why on earth would you then decide to set yourself goals and challenges which involve not doing or being anything that you like? It makes no sense to me whatsoever. So
yeah,
September,
I totally agree.
September's yeah. always been that's the
start of the school year.
Exactly, exactly.
New year.
But
yeah.
This September, I've decided is fuck off month, and I'm just saying fuck off to anything that does not suit me and does not serve me, and it's been just so liberating and actually quite. It just makes life so much easier, you know. When someone asks me to do something or whatever, I just think, does that serve me? Is that something I want to? No, fuck off. They can fuck off. Even driving along in the car, if someone's beat me, you know, normally I'd think, oh no, why? But now I just think, beep, fuck off. It's been wonderful. And I think that is a midlife thing. I don't care anymore. I don't care if you think I'm a grumpy middle-aged woman. Possibly I am.
I don't think you are. I don't think you are at all. But Andrea, this is my wardrobe malfunction. So what has been your worst?
Oh my God, there's too many to mention. There is too many to mention. I can remember one day I was doing the weather, and we would choose our own clothes. You'd bring them in and this sort of stuff. As long as they were pastel, they didn't care. And I had seen, I think it was in Kukai. Can you remember Kukai from 100 years ago?
Of course I remember Kukai, yes.
100 years ago. I think it was there. and it was a lilac PVC suit. And I thought this was an incredible thing. And because I was in my 20s, it fit me and looked all right. So I bought this lilac PVC suit. And I remember I walked in at 5:45 or whatever to get ready to go in front of the camera. And the cameramen, who I'm still friends with, a lot of the cameramen are still the cameramen now that do Loose Them In. I remember they're standing behind their cameras and they just went like this. But not in a good way. Not in a good way. And I didn't quite pick up on the vibe, so I was busy preparing. Anyway, earpiece in, mic on, do all this. Got to 6 o'clock. Did my first broadcast. And this is in the olden days before emails and stuff. And it was when the people used to ring in. The phones just went nuts. But not as in, what a gorgeous outfit you're wearing. It was more, what the hell is she doing? And our boss, who was still in bed at home, rang in and went, basically, what the fuck? Tell her to get that outfit off right now. So that was at 6:01. By 6:25, I was back in my shift dress. I had to take my lilac PVC suit off. I tell you what, I kept the trousers though, and I wore them once on Fun in the Sun with Mr. Motivator, because PVC is surprisingly warm if you have to do early morning broadcast, because it looks warm, but it looks sunny, but still quite cold.
Yeah.
And Mr. Motivator and I had to do this live going down this funny slide thing. And because it was PVC, I burnt a hole in my bottom in my PVC trousers.
Serves you right. It serves you right. I'm sorry, shame on you for buying a lilac PVC suit. Really, I can't. A lilac, what a terrible colour for you, Andrea.
Awful.
Awful.
What was
awful.
I thinking?
What were you thinking? Okay, so then what would your birthday suit be? So you've got a wonderful occasion and you need something that is going to make you feel $1 million. What would that be?
Well, my go-to would be black. It would be black because I look nice in black.
You do. It suits you.
I mean, I do look, I feel like I look a bit like... what's his name? Snape from Harry Potter today?
Because the way my goodness sake, no, but yeah. Okay.
Hang on, I look like this.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Very disappointed.
Okay, yes, you do.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. Put the glasses back on.
So when I've do you know what it is? Because I'm sitting on my bedroom floor with an overhead light on. And also, when I'm on the telly, I wear hair pieces, so I clip in loads of hair and make myself look
fantastic,
all glam.
But yeah.
I'm really honest about the fact that I do it, because otherwise lovely women look at the telly and think, why can't I look like that? So I've been known in the middle of the street to take my hair pieces out and wave them and go, it's not me, it's not real, because I want to make people feel good and let them know you can do it too. Just buy them and clip them in. You can get them from Amazon. So what would I wear? Well, I'd wear lots of clip-in hair. So my hair is fabulous. And then, do you know, I think I would wear what I wore for my 50th. I love the dress I wore for my 50th. It was actually a dark brown, which sounds horrible, but it was lovely. And it was sequined. The whole dress was sequins. And it was a like a pretend wraparound dress with long sleeves, a very deep low cleavage, because my boobs are the one thing I'm still really proud of. Everything else is not quite as it was, but I've still got good boobs. And it sort of crossed over like that and was very figure hugging, but I didn't even have to wear Spanx or anything. It was really comfortable.
Wow. Yeah.
So I could just wear my normal underwear, but still felt quite sexy, but still me, because I had my long sleeves. It was a classy color, and I had really killer high gold heels on.
Sounds gorgeous, because it's like the dress isn't wearing you. Beautiful colour for you. Simplicity is the art of decoration.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, so you've got your new book coming out, This Girl Is On Fire, which is out on the 29th of September, so any minute now. And everybody, you've got to read it, because it's kind of everything I expected you to be, because you're so warm and open. And that really comes through in the book. But there's so much, what I found, there's lots of things that I identified with that I always thought I was the only person who ever felt them. So I got a lot of comfort from reading it about many of the parts. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. It's a, you know, it was quite a terrifying thing actually to write a book like this because it's
the heart on your sleeve, opening up. My goodness. You left nothing out.
Apart from things that legally I couldn't put in, I left nothing out. Do you know, to be so raw and vulnerable and open was really terrifying because I was scared people wouldn't like me anymore. Because people have this image of me as I'm the very together head girl at the end of the desk who holds all the loose women in sort of check. And then for me to put my hand up and go, I actually had a nervous breakdown last year, and it was because of extreme trauma that I experienced in my past at the hands of another human. And it took going on a TV show where I didn't expect it to happen, but every mask I've ever worn was ripped off my face in terms of, you know, there was a bit in it where we had a bag put over our head. This is on SAS Who Dares Wins. It's a Channel 4 program. Mm. And it was
you were brilliant in that. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
I was so impressed. Yeah.
That was another thing where I thought, well, I look back on my life and wish I'd done it, and I didn't want to regret it, and I don't regret it. But doing that sort of unintentionally and unknowingly to me, it ripped off every mask that I'd ever worn, the sort of the mum mask, the wife mask, the broadcaster mask, and I was just stood there raw. And it forced me when I got home to deal with all these things that I hadn't resolved. I think all of us have been through things in our life, and some of them are more traumatic than others. And I do think that one person's trauma does not belittle another. You know, this isn't a tit for tat thing as to whose is worse than others. Your thing is your thing. And for me, because I managed to reach out for help, I had some incredible people around me who were able to recommend, so experts who gave me advice and books to read, and I had therapy as well. I just really wanted to pay it forward in the same way as I did with my last book, which was all about paying it forward with information with the menopause. It was literally that simple. Just, I can't believe you guys aren't getting access to this. So here it all is. It was the same thing. But for me, I wanted to write a self-help book based on stories because I think that anybody can put loads of facts and figures and information out there, but you don't remember them. What you remember is stories.
Exactly.
You remember
stories. Especially women. Yeah. Women remember stories.
We relate to it. And I think, like, for example, I've broken it down into chapters, and one of the chapters is called We're All a Mixture of Shit and Brilliance. Mm. And that, I think, is probably the key thing to take away from the book. Especially as women, don't set yourself up to fail by thinking if you don't do everything perfectly, then you've got it all wrong. Actually, nobody really knows what they're doing. We're all just muddling through. And once you get your head around that, actually you realize how brilliantly that you're doing. So I really appreciate that you like the book.
No,
thank
I
you
really
so much.
Did.
I just and want I to really help.
And you know, having spoken to you now, that you aren't shit, you're brilliant. And it's maybe some of the lilac PVC super shit, but you are brilliant, and I've loved talking to you. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So lovely. Yeah, and you take care.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.